You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The following episode deals with mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Deborah Scaling Kiley sat in a rubber dinghy in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, reciting the Lord's Prayer in a desperate attempt to convince herself she hadn't gone mad. The water surrounding the boat had turned a sickly shade of red as the blood of her devoured crewmate rose to the surface. The Trashman yacht had been lost at sea for 3 days, originally consisting of 5 crew members. What started out as a simple voyage had quickly turned into a hellish nightmare on the freezing and treacherous Atlantic waters. In this perilous tale, you can decide if the Trashman yacht had been destined for disaster all along, or had it been a voyage made worse due to a string of poor decisions by its crew members, or did it all come down to luck? A roll of the dice in this episode of Deadly Misadventures.
You knew your time would come, and you knew there was a price to pay. I just can't help but smile, see the satisfaction on my face, 'cause I knew that there would come a day I'm gonna do bad things, do it like it's nothing. Being bad has never felt so good. Doing bad things to you. Doing bad things to you.
Unlike the ocean waters she eventually fell in love with, Deborah Scaling's early life was anything but calm. Born in Throckmorton, Texas in 1958, Deborah suffered through somewhat of an unhappy childhood. Her parents divorced when she was just a baby, and her mother went on to marry several more times before Deborah was even 10 years old. One of her mother's partners became physically abusive towards young Deborah, and by her early teens, she developed an eating disorder, an illness that stayed with her right until adulthood. However, Deborah didn't let these hardships consume her. She developed a resilience to these struggles, something which would aid her later in life. At age 8, Deborah attended Camp Grady Spruce in Texas, and it was there she discovered sailing for the first time. She spent her days sailing and worked on boats as a teenager, and by age 20, her love for sailing overshadowed everything else in her life. So much so, she dropped out of her placement at the University of Texas to focus full-time on sailing. When one crew job ended, Deborah immediately began searching for the next one, quickly racking up some achievements on the high seas. Deborah took part in sailing competitions such as Race Week in Antigua and the prestigious Whitbread Race, becoming the first woman to successfully sail around the world.
Such grueling missions had hardened Deborah to a life at sea, and she believed that no voyage could defeat her, least of all a simple 5-day trek from Maine to Florida.
In the fall of 1982, Deborah is floundering around. She's working as a waitress in Bar Harbor, Maine. Her only thoughts are about her next journey into the ocean. She decides to go down to the boatyard and advertise her services as a crew member. She will be contacted by a man named John Lippeth, the captain of the Trashman yacht. If you spent any time on the water, you'll find that a lot of boats have weird or funny names. The Trashman was named after the owner's success in the garbage industry. John had been hired to deliver the yacht from Maine to a new owner in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Deborah thought John was a decent enough sailor, but she found that he wasn't very reliable. In the 3 weeks they spent prepping the Trashman, Deborah frequently found him intoxicated at the boathouse bar. On some mornings, she found him passed out in the boat crew's quarters. Other sailors let her know that John had a quite unsavory reputation, but his experience as a seaman spoke for itself. So Deborah gave him the benefit of the doubt. They were struggling to find additional crew members, so John brought along his girlfriend Meg. She had zero experience, had barely stepped on a yacht, but John didn't seem to care because he just wanted more warm bodies to help. In October 1982, the three set sail for Florida. They stopped in Annapolis, Maryland to pick up more crew. There they found Brad Kavanaugh and Mark Adams. Deborah was actually familiar with Brad, and she trusted him as a competent sailor. Mark, however, she didn't know. Much like John, Mark was a heavy drinker. He was loud, brash, and aggressive, which was a perfect match for John, who ended up recruiting him immediately. Mark claimed he would soon be captaining a ship named the Ocean Greyhound. It was a prestigious yacht that took part in the Whitbread Race, which Deborah had previously competed in. So with those credentials, Deborah assumed he must be a decent sailor. She had her doubts, so she decided to contact the owner of the Ocean Greyhound and ask about Mark. He told her he'd never heard of a Mark Adams, nor had he ever spoken to a Mark Adams, and the ship wasn't even scheduled to be sailed anytime soon. Deborah began to have serious doubts about this trip. Between the captain being untrustworthy, Meg's inexperience, and it turns out that Mark was a liar. So in Deborah's mind, only Brad could be trusted. While they were docked, Deborah took John aside and told him about her doubts and worries. She told him the crew they had assembled were incapable of making the trip, and attempting to do so could put their lives at risk. When John pushed back, she said she didn't want any part of this journey. So John told Deborah if she quit, he'd make sure she'd never sail again.
And so Deborah returned to the Trashman and took off into the sea with her four crewmates. Little did she know, her instincts were more trustworthy than she could have ever imagined.
The early hours of the morning came, and it was time to set sail. Surprisingly, yet unsurprisingly, Mark and John had been drinking heavily throughout the night. Meg had barely shown her face, reserved to the crew's quarters all night, and only really coming up for alcohol. Deborah ended up confronting Mark about his lies, and tensions rose after a brief argument broke out. After that, the two of them kept their distance from each other, alternating shifts to steer the ship. As you might expect, Deborah and Brad ended up doing the bulk of the work on the boat. They were not only the most experienced, but they happened to be the only sober ones. By the next day, the winds had picked up, and water conditions had become treacherous. Weirdly enough, weather reports showed no change in condition. Deborah was off shift and was trying to catch up on some sleep when John woke her up. She asked him what's wrong, and he said, "There's a storm outside. It's blowing 40 knots out there. We're taking in serious water, and Mark's gone kind of wild." Deborah, who had just been woken up from a dead sleep, tried to process what was just said to her. So she ran to the deck, and that's where she found Mark at the helm. John's description of the situation was right. Solid walls of water were crashing into the boat's stern, tipping the trash man from side to side. Mark seemed unconcerned. He was actually laughing and howling. Deborah thought he looked possessed. Mark turned to Deborah and said, "Hope this isn't much to you, Miss Whitbread." He was more or less trying to insult her credentials and knock her down a notch. But Deborah brushed it off and she took over the helm. Wind speeds had picked up even more, hitting 71 knots. That's equivalent to 80 miles per hour. It took all of her strength to hold the rudder counter to the water currents. When 4 a.m. came, Deborah was all but depleted. She handed steering duties over to Brad, and now that she had time to inspect the boat, she discovered the true extent of the damages caused by the storm. The Dodger was shredded, the anemometer had been ripped apart, antenna blown out to sea, and the compass destroyed. The yacht was in ruins. John called the Coast Guard for assistance. They gave him directions towards the shore since their compass had been destroyed. However, the instructions were almost impossible to follow. Conditions were too severe to maneuver in the necessary direction, so John gave up and requested the Coast Guard send someone out to rescue them. The Coast Guard replied that they will be there in 5 hours. This terrified Deborah, hearing John, the captain, admit defeat and call in for the Coast Guard. She had never called the Coast Guard in all of her years on the ocean. She went and informed the rest of the crew that John had called for help, and Mark's response was, "We're fine. We don't need help. Effing amateurs." This was typical of Mark's attitude. After 11 hours of trying to steer the boat and being on watch, she didn't want to deal with Mark any longer, so she retired back to her crew's quarters. There she found Meg passed out, while the other three men remained on deck. Deborah thought if she could just get 4 hours of sleep, then hopefully when she woke up, the Coast Guard would be there to rescue them and all would be well.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once, a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void
Deborah was forced at that point to put her faith in her fellow crew members and the Coast Guard to get her through what was beginning to look like it could be the end.
What felt like mere seconds after closing her eyes, she's snapped awake by Brad, shaking her, saying, "Come on, we're going." Going where? Deborah thought. She wondered if the Coast Guard had arrived. But once she left her quarters, she discovered that there was no Coast Guard. Instead, she saw water cascading through the portholes right into the main cabin. She spotted Mark, struggling against the incoming water, his eyes wide and bloodshot. And then she saw Meg, huddled in the main cabin. She looked like she was screaming, but no sound was coming out of her mouth. John was shouting into the radio, "Mayday, we're sinking, mayday, mayday." The water in the cabin was almost up to Deborah's shoulders. When she got up to the deck, Deborah saw the dark gray skies and felt the icy winds against her face. There were endless miles of water in every direction. No help had arrived, and they were utterly alone. The reality of their situation fully kicked in. The trash man was sinking, and there was nothing the crew could do about it. Brad was on the top cabin roof, struggling to free a small life raft from its clasps. Simultaneously, Mark was trying to get the life raft out of a plastic container, but a column of water crashed down onto the boat, and it sent both Brad, Mark, the dinghy, and the life raft into the sea. In the chaos, the dinghy had overturned, but Brad had managed to grab a hold of it. Mark didn't have much luck. He lost the life raft that had all of the life-saving equipment in it. Water filtration, location beacons, first aid kits, everything they needed to survive. Back on the yacht, the wave dragged Deborah into the rigging of the main mast. She was plunged underwater. When she was finally able to get back to the surface, she found Meg, stained with blood and treading water. As she looked over towards the ravaged yacht, she could see the trash man's mass gradually sinking below the water. Deborah was able to pull herself and Meg over to the raft, where Brad, John, and Mark already were. They held on for their lives. The trash man was now laying on its side, the deck already submerged, and another wave knocked the yacht back upright. It was as though the boat was making one last attempt to survive.
Minutes later, Deborah watched as the trash man yacht became engulfed by waves, descending towards the ocean floor. All that remained were the five crewmates and the rough waters.
"It's all over. It's all over," John cried hysterically. Mark was screaming, "We're all going to effing die." Over and over. They held on as the tiny rubber dinghy rose and fell against the waves while frantically treading water. Deborah became aware of intense burns on her hands from the friction of holding onto the ropes and trying to save her own life. She felt her heartbeat beating out of her chest, and all she could do was lay her head against the raft, smelling rubber and tasting the salty sea's residue in the back of her throat. She heard John and Mark shouting, but their voices were very muffled. She turned and looked at them and wasn't able to make out their faces or profile. It was as though it was an abstract painting she was looking at. All of their supplies were on the yacht, all of their communication equipment had been washed away, and the life raft was lost. All they had was a rubber dinghy with nothing in it. Any incoming help had no way of tracing their whereabouts or finding them in this vast ocean. Deborah had had the least amount of sleep over the past 24 hours. The physical toll of treading water had exhausted her. For 18 hours, they were treading water, holding on to this raft. They would take turns and hoist one member up on top so they could rest. And as the second night set in, they lost complete track of time. It had been almost a day since they called the Coast Guard, and they thought all hope was lost. Meg began shouting, "Look over there, there's a light." And as the dinghy would rise up on a huge wave, Deborah saw a faint light in the distance. John saw it too. "I see it over there." Brad asked, "Do you think it's the Coast Guard? They must be looking for us." It was a brief glimpse of hope. However, Deborah knew the truth. It was a distant boat, but there was no chance it would see them. It was too dark and the waves were too fierce. The light gradually disappeared along with their hopes of survival. Hours later, dawn came. The waves had settled, and they've managed to turn the life raft over and climb inside. Deborah stayed in the water because the temperature in the water was 76 degrees. However, air temperature was around 40 degrees, and Deborah knew that she needed to preserve her body heat in order to survive. For the first time, Deborah saw the extent of Meg's injuries. The waves had sent her crashing into the ship's rigging, which had lacerated her leg, exposing her bone. Although the salt water had washed away much of it, there was still a constant stream of blood dripping from the gaping wound. The freezing winds had become too much for Mark, so he jumped back into the water. While they both hung on, Mark said, "Don't kick me." Deborah was a little confused and said, "I'm not touching you, Mark." "You did it again. Cut it out." Deborah saw that Mark was getting very angry, and so she said, "I'm nowhere near you." And then she decided to dunk her head underwater to see what might be touching his leg. If you've ever opened your eyes in salt water, it stings like hell. However, Deborah was sure of what she saw. Sharks, hundreds of them, circling below them, drawn to the area from Meg's bloody leg. And one came close enough that Deborah was able to look into its dead eyes, staring right back at her. Deb screamed in horror and immediately jumped back into the boat. Then she felt Mark fall on top of her.
Now fighting starvation, dehydration, hypothermia, and sharks, the crew realized that their chances of survival were almost zero. Even Deborah, the young survivalist taught to fight against the odds, was very close to accepting defeat.
They all huddled together to share body warmth, but the winds were so strong and the wind chill so severe that it would just blow all the warmth off of them. Blood and urine had begun mixing in the water that had accumulated at the bottom of the raft. And then Deborah saw something floating beside them. It was seaweed. And she thought, "We can use that to stay warm." So she told the group, "Hey, get the seaweed in the boat. We can cover ourselves with it." And yet again, Mark showed his positive attitude and said, "And get our arms chewed off while we gather it?" Deborah snapped, "Fine, you can freeze to death." And as usual, Brad stepped up and said, "I'll help fend off the sharks while you pull it in." Deborah pulled in a big clump of sargasso weed. It had relics of the dry land. Deborah wondered what had become of the owners. Had they died at sea? Were they back on land, telling their heroic stories to family and friends? She asked herself, "Is this a test? I know I've screwed things up in my life, but I don't want to die." Deborah prayed and said, "I'm sorry, God. If you get me through this, I'll try and do better. I'll try to change."
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The third night came, sharks still circling below them, despite drifting away from where Meg's blood had filled the waters.
As they fell asleep, they hoped the next morning would bring new sun, new light, and new hopes of rescue. The Coast Guard was surely out in full force by now. Maybe tomorrow would be the day they were rescued.
Brad woke up Deborah. It was still dark.
Debbie.
Took her a minute to understand where she was.
Debbie,
what do you think they're doing? Brad asked. Deborah lifted her head. She saw Meg sitting completely naked next to her. But leaning over the stern, she saw two silhouettes. It was John and Mark. When you're severely dehydrated, it becomes an all-consuming compulsion to find and drink water. At first, your throat dries out. This dryness spreads to your eyes, your nose, your skin, and it makes you itch all over. And then an unbearable agony engulfs your entire body. For 2 days, Deb, Brad, and Meg had resisted any urge to drink, but John and Mark, they couldn't take it anymore. Deborah said, "They're drinking seawater, and we should really stop them." Brad, too exhausted to bother, said, "It's probably too late." They knew the inevitable outcome of drinking seawater causes malfunction in every major organ. It causes neurons in the brain to shut down. And given that they were already extremely dehydrated, there was nothing in Mark or Brad's system to dilute the salt water. Madness will come in a matter of hours. Deborah turned to Brad and said, "Promise me you won't do the same." He didn't reply. They slept through the night, and at dawn the next morning, they saw the sun for the first time since the trash man sank. They were awoken by the ramblings of John. "We're right off Falmouth. Let's just drive to the hospital where my mom works. She'll take care of us." Brad looked at him and said, "We're nowhere near Falmouth. We're in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean." "Bullshit. It's right over there," John pointed. Mark had been searching around, and he interrupted John and asked, "Where are my cigarettes? Did you take them? You took them, didn't you?" Deborah looked at Mark and John. She knew it would happen, but she didn't think it would happen so soon. Mark continued, "I just went to 7-Eleven and bought beer and cigarettes. I want to know who took them." He continued looking for these non-existent cigarettes, and his words became jumbled. "Hey, John, want a smoke?" "Sure," John said. "I got some sandwiches over here. You want one?" Under any other circumstance, this conversation would be completely ordinary. But these two men are on the verge of insanity and moments away from death. "I'm going to the car. I know right where the car is." This went on for what seemed like hours, while trying to talk sense into the dehydrated men.
Deborah had to close her eyes to shut out this bizarre interaction. And when she opened them, she witnessed John lowering himself into the water. "What are you doing?" she screamed.
"I can't take this anymore. I'm going to get the car." When Meg realized what was happening, she rushed over to the side of the boat and started begging John to get back into the raft. She then turned to Debbie and pleaded for her to go after him, but it was too late. John was already in the water. Deborah saw the silhouette of the back of John's head, and as the waves went up, John's head disappeared. Then they heard a scream they've never heard from a human being before. Meg brought her hand up to her mouth. They watched as a pool of blood rose from where John used to be. Meg fell back into Deb's arms, both of them crying, but too dehydrated to have any tears. Meg's boyfriend, the captain of the ship, was gone. Everyone else knew it was only a matter of time before Meg would succumb to her wounds.
But Mark was still going. He turned to Meg and said, "Hey lady, isn't it about time that me and you had sex? What do you say?" John had just died a couple hours earlier. Meg was in a state of shock, and Mark kept reaching out to her, but Meg just burst into tears and wailed. Mark pulled away and said, "F you. I'm tired of playing games. I'm going to the 7-Eleven to get cigarettes." A few seconds later, Mark stood up and walked off the raft and into the water. At this point, something struck their deep so hard that it sent it spinning around. They searched the water looking for Mark, but there was no sign of him. Something hit the boat again, and Deborah saw a frenzy of sharks heading towards the raft. At this point, Brad grabbed Deborah, pulled her flat to the bottom of the raft. Meg began screaming, and Brad had a look of fear in his eyes. Deborah hadn't seen Brad look afraid yet, so this was something new. They heard a scraping sound underneath the raft as it was pummeled from side to side.
The sharks knew they were there. They'd had their taste, and they weren't going to leave until they'd eaten them all.
Deborah imagined how it would happen. The hissing sound of the air escaping the raft, feeling the rubber deflating, then finding herself back in the water with nothing to hold on to. No one would know of her struggles. No one would know how long she fought and the inhuman strength and courage she had shown.
Deborah closed her eyes and began reciting the Lord's Prayer over and over again. The sharks finally stopped hammering the boat and gave them some reprieve. Meg, who had been mostly incapacitated during this whole ordeal, suddenly began to growl, snarl, animal-like. She lunged forward and briefly attacked Brad with a surprising new vigor that took all of Brad's strength to push her off of him. After some time, Meg calmed down and laid down in Debbie's arms. "It's time to go," Meg said, lying there in Deb's arms. "We're there. I'm going home."
Deborah, Brad, and Meg sat looking up at the stars. Meg raised her hands and began tracing lines in the air, almost gracefully, and she whispered something in low, hushed tones. They were weird foreign words that meant nothing. Brad said, "What is that?" "I think she's speaking in tongues," Deborah said. Meg began moaning in agony until she fell silent. Her last words were, "I'm taking three souls and leaving you to tell."
They said a prayer and then laid Meg to rest in the sea.
It had now been 5 days since the trash man had capsized. Weak from all they had endured over the last few days, Deborah began to lose hope. After everything she had been through, she addressed the very probable reality that she was going to die on that life raft.
Deborah and Brad were determined to fight on to the very end, so they made the decision to clean out the boat. It was a dangerous decision, but they lowered themselves into the water, capsized the boat, emptying out all of its disgusting contents, flipped the raft back over, and then hauled themselves back into the raft. Because they were so exhausted, this process took them almost 30 minutes. The waters had calmed, the sun came up, and it was a blue sky. The sun gave them the first trickle of warmth they've felt in 3 days. As they laid with their eyes closed, in and out of consciousness, Deborah said, "Maybe we could catch a fish. We'll catch them, clean them, and eat them. They're not so tough, you know. When we get one, we can divide it up and live off that. We'll just keep catching and eating them until we wash ashore or until somebody finds us." "Debbie," Brad interrupted. Debbie carried on rambling. "I'm sure we're headed west. So we're going..." "Debbie," Brad interrupted again. "I know it's far-fetched, but we might just see land in the next couple minutes." "There's a ship," Brad asserted. Debbie stopped talking for a second. Brad had sounded so calm that Debbie assumed that he was going insane, so she continued going on about the fish.
Brad repeated again, "There's a ship." And so Debbie finally turned around. And there it was.
Majestically in front of them on the horizon.
A large freighter. It had got bigger and bigger as it approached them. But then it passed them by. It was almost in slow motion, deflating their hope. Seeing this freighter go by, they sank back into the raft, but then Debbie watched as the ship altered its course, and she yelled to Brad, "It's coming back! It's coming back!"
By some miracle, against all odds, Brad and Deborah had been discovered by a passing Russian vessel. Deborah Scaling and Brad Kavanaugh escaped with their lives.
Deborah went out for dinner with her family. Being alive was an almost surreal feeling to her, so much that after dinner, she went down to the nearby docks to look out into the ocean, to say goodbye.
The incident, as you might assume, haunted Deborah for the rest of her life.
When she would close her eyes, she would often hear John's horrific scream as he was taken by sharks. When she was on a plane or in a vehicle, she'd sometimes feel as though she was still on the ocean. She would often drink only half a glass of water to ensure that there would always be more. Debbie reminisced.
"It was as if some part of me still lived, could only live, on the raft, adrift at sea."
So what was it that made it possible for Deborah and Brad to survive such a terrifying ordeal and not the others? Certainly, Deborah had never painted herself as a victim in life. From the beginning, she was a fighter and a survivor and was never in denial about her situation, keeping her wits about her even during the most despairing moments. Her crewmates, on the other hand, seemed to make the best of their situation through other means. They drank, made jokes, and covered their fear with rage. Meg, unfortunately, appeared to just be unlucky and in a relationship that ultimately guided her onto the trash man the day it set sail for the very last time. Brad Kavanaugh is alive today and living in Massachusetts and working as a mariner. Deborah became a motivational speaker in 1994 and went on to marry twice and have two children. Sadly, in 2012, Deborah passed away at the age of 54. The circumstances of her death have remained private.
I'm gonna do bad things, do it like it's nothing. Being bad has never felt so good. doing bad things to you. Doing bad things to you.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.